breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Politics Hour. And Joe Zepecki's in the studio smiling with his Packers hat on backward, as you would expect from Joe Zepecki. Although, yeah, I think you walked in with wearing it the right way. We need his mic on. There we go.
I did. I walked in with it on.
That was on
face
you.
Forward.
And you've been on this show enough. You know,
I should know better.
You should know you got to turn the mic on. And Bill McCutcheon is, as they say, on assignments.
Oh, I thought I was going to do both roles today. I thought if I just went like, Superior hockey. Then people would think I was also Bill.
That's rather diminishing of Bill's talents.
It really is.
Yeah, that's almost not.
But
fair.
It's easier for me to talk about hockey than it is a Republican point of view. So
I thought you were aware of both sides.
That's I am.
I think you're a smart enough guy to figure that out. So I will be sort of filling into the role of Bill McCutcheon, even though he's much more savvy and politically astute than I am. But I'll do my best.
There you go. Hey, we'll have fun.
So, breaking news since we last, was it since we last talked?
Yeah, because Friday we walked out of here at noon.
That's right.
Or no, you walked out of here at noon. I walked out of here at 10 a.m.
Yeah, and you had.
And I had heard an inkling.
Insider knowledge.
And I was pretty disappointed because, as listeners may know, the last couple of times I've had to miss, we've had a great Democrat fill in for me. A lot of people are saying they like her more than they like me.
A lot of people said that, yes.
Sarah Godlewski, former state treasurer, now Secretary of State, had the big announcement on Friday afternoon. What did you make of that? Surprise?
Not surprising at all. I mean, I spent a half hour on the show yesterday talking about this fake angst and anger about the fact that the governor actually filled a role.
Yeah.
When I know full well my Republican friends, conservative friends, would have done the exact same thing if they had the opportunity. What are we doing here?
Well, even more than that, if the governor had said, we're going to call a special election, Republicans would have criticized him for spending the millions of dollars that it takes to run a statewide election.
Exactly. So I don't get too worked up about it. I think she actually has enough. Well, I mean, let's be honest. Again, Republicans and conservatives have dumbed down that position for years.
Yeah.
And actually, Sarah has some knowledge from her role as treasurer because she serves on some of the commissions that matter in this new role.
And knowing how to sort of navigate being a constitutional officer with a really limited staff. That's sort of a unique skill set to try to balance, you know, wanting to have a statewide platform, having things you have to do, only having like one or 1.5, you know, staffers. So, I think it's an inspired choice. I wish Secretary La Follette well.
Done his work. I mean, goodness, how old is he?
82.
Enjoy your retirement.
Yeah. And so, you know, congratulations to Madam Secretary, I guess we call her now.
Yeah. She probably won't come on the show anymore.
I was thinking, well, she might. I guess we could still ask her. Because I don't know how many other folks whose name ends in a vowel I could find to fill in for me.
What's that mean?
I'm an I, you're an I, Godlewski.
it's overwhelming.
Yeah. So I thought that was the theme here.
That reeks of Milwaukee. That's right. Although she's not from Milwaukee.
That's right.
So, I mean, other than the hypocrisy and all the pronouncements when this happened, it's really just going to be business as usual, right? There's not a lot in that job right now.
Correct. They've stripped it down to the bone. And, you know, she gave an interview yesterday to the Associated Press, sort of walking through the whole process of when the governor reached out and what she hopes to do. And I think she's doing it the right way, which is she's saying, listen, job number one, I'm going to go around the state and talk to, you know, local officials and talk to the public and figure, what do you want this role to be? And I think that speaks to the kind of leader that Sarah is and the job she did as state treasurer. So I think it's great. Congratulations.
That actually leads to a great question. What should the role be? Because other states use it dramatically different. I mean, they oversee elections.
Yeah. Well, as she said, you know, this is the Secretary of State Godlewski saying, the Wisconsin Elections Commission is doing a good job. There's no need to mess with that. But that doesn't mean that there's other things that are being missed. And sort of having fresh eyes on that with a big brain like hers, I think is awesome.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned the Wisconsin Elections Commission because all of that noise has died down too for the most part. It's funny how you get farther away from a, you know, fake election conspiracy story it doesn't become that significant anymore.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think there's still, you know, concerns about some of the characters associated with that commission given some
fake electors serving on the commission?
Yes, I that's not my favorite. I think we could probably do a little bit better for one of our Republican appointees. But, you know, on the other hand, I'm encouraged by, and I think we talked about this recently, you know, the fact that the Wisconsin Republican Party and conservative candidates are encouraging absentee voting and encouraging mail-in voting. I think that's great. We've thought that all along on my side.
Isn't it funny how things change? Like, I had people that were adamant about this is the worst way.
Yeah, I'll never vote this way again.
Yes, and now it's encouraged by nearly every Republican candidate. And, oh, by the way, former President Trump did that very way of voting when he was in office.
Listen, 13 of 16, if those are the last 16 statewide elections, Democrats or progressives have won 13 of them. You know, that, if that's not a wake-up call for my Republican friends, I don't know what is.
So shift gears after the break to the Supreme Court race. The final debates, only debates, was held Tuesday afternoon.
And what a debate it was.
Oh, my goodness. The term liar gets thrown around a lot in these.
Yeah, places. Also not great.
Yeah.
Also not great.
So we'll talk about that with our guest, only Joe Zepecki, but a lot of people say that's enough.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know how many people that
I'm
is,
no really. Sarah Godlewski, but I'll do my best.
SKI. She might have the one up on you now because of all the big news. All right. Join us in the conversation, 855-616-1620. This is the Old National Bank talk and text line on this Friday edition right here on WTMJ. We're live in studio, the Avenue Studios here in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Joe Zepecki in studio. Bill McCosh, Republican strategist, on assignment, so I'm sort of serving in his role. The one and only debates, real debates, not if you even call
it. Do we call it a debate?
No, it's more like a press conference with like moderators.
Yeah, it's like dueling banjos.
Yes. Interesting, because I use that theme a lot on my show. What did you make of the last and final face-to-face between the candidates?
We've got to figure out a better way to do this. And I don't just mean judicial debates. I mean debates, period.
Yes.
Because we've been talking about this. There's a tendency for fewer debates. Frankly, the ones that we get way too often devolve into just food fights. I don't think the public is getting from them what they expected, right? I think, you know, you and I are old enough to remember, you know, Bush Gore, even the sort of Clinton, Perot, Dole debates. Like, people took something away from those. It gave you a real, like, insight into the candidates that you didn't have.
It was destination viewing.
Yes. And, like, I mean, tens of millions of Americans would watch that stuff. And we've had this slide in the last, I'd say, 20 years especially, where it's like, candidates, and listen, I've been part of this. Like, when we assess, you know, whether you should do a debate, how many debates you should do, a lot of it becomes risk management. And you say, listen, we can control the videos we put out, whether it's a 30-second ad or a 2-minute, you know, fun social media video. We can control things more there. That means there's more risk when you're on stage and there's three journalists and your opponent's there. And, you know, you don't want to have a bad moment or do what we call bad tape, where you're stuttering over your words, you give the wrong answer, and then that turns into a tack ad. And so as a result, you get these dueling press conferences, and it's just like shouting at one another, and it's as nasty as the rest of our politics. And I just don't know what people are learning from this.
They're learning nothing. And they're wasting time in their current format. Now, not that it's the same thing, but you mentioned risk management.
Mm-hmm.
My point of view was always, and I, as mayor, I did these meet the mayor things where I'd invite the public and invite the press and whoever showed up, and I would just answer questions from the audience. The only smart thing we did was we didn't let the audience hold the mic, because otherwise they take it hostage and you have it crazy.
Never get it back.
But done the right way, if you're afraid to answer questions, you're not the right person for the job, in my opinion.
Yeah, this must be where Ask Steve Anything was born.
Yes.
I love it.
You have to respond real time to a question that you don't know what's coming.
Yeah, I think you would learn more and you would get more insight if you had, like, each candidate individually, maybe one after the other, do a genuine town hall meeting. That's the other thing that we don't see of anymore. Even in states like New Hampshire and Iowa, it seems like there's fewer of them at the presidential level. And so what you get is just, she's lying about me. He's lying about me. No, that's a lie. You're not being truthful. And it just... it's not a great look. I expected that a judicial debate would be a slightly higher level of decorum.
No, everything's ruined now.
And I was going to say, like, obviously the tone of the debate was not my favorite, but I really got to point out that the bare minimum that former Justice Kelly could have done was referred to his opponent as Judge Janet or Judge Protasiewicz. To routinely call her Janet, I thought, was a level of petty that we haven't seen, and that's saying something.
So why do you think That's the strategy.
I don't know that it's a strategy.
Your opponent? Just rude.
Yes. I think that, listen, Mr. Kelly and his followers have a very high opinion of his intellectual acumen. And I think there's an SNL skit that comes to mind. I can't believe I'm losing to this. and they're kind of taking it on the chin, and they're getting outspent, and they haven't been able to change the dynamics of the race. That's very frustrating. And sometimes when you're frustrated, the first thing to go is that just sort of base level of respect. But I thought that was a really bad look for Justice Kelly.
The money's come back. It's 2-1 now, I think.
Yeah, as opposed to 39-1 where it started.
Well, he said, to his credit, former Justice Kelly said that at some point the cavalry will come. Has the cavalry come? Is this what we're going to see? I mean, we only have less than 2 weeks left.
Yeah, I mean, nobody thought it was going to stay 39-1. The fact that it's 2-1 in dollars is not the full story, right? From my standpoint, if you're trying to win a race, you know, we're strategists. This is why you have us on. We know how to run races. It's not just about the money. It's also about the amount you're able to communicate. And one of the things that I think is getting a little lost is the candidates themselves get the best rates for the ads. So if a candidate spends $100,000 and a outside group spends $100,000, the candidate's $100,000 goes a lot farther.
Yeah.
Right?
They're getting one and a half cheap rates.
Yeah, exactly. And so even though the spending is 2-1, the number of ads, what we call the points, the gross rating points, the number of times people are seeing the ads, that's still like 3 or 4-1.
Right.
And that's a tough place for Mr. Kelly to find himself in with just 2 weeks left.
We see these swirling, gossipy stories going around about both candidates. One's not gossip. The Justice Kelly was at an event where an individual, Pressler is the last name, I believe.
Yeah.
He's a pretty crazy guy.
Yeah.
Scary guy.
Was this the guy who said it was justifiable homicide to shoot doctors? Or was this the guy
who was...
Oh, so it wasn't the guy who was at January 6th and planned a bunch of Stop the Steal rallies? Because they were both in the last week.
Well, the individual I'm talking about was also at January 6th. And of course, the Judge Jana Protasiewicz story is treatment of her ex-former husband many, many years ago. Any of that matter in this race?
I don't think so. Because it... You know, listen, I wish more people listened to radio stations like this and read the daily newspaper and were really informed about what's going on. The reality is news consumption is dropping, and so it's really hard to break through with anything. And sort of daily stories like that, I'm not sure it's great. I think the stories that hurt the most are ones that reinforce a pre-existing narrative. And I think the Protasiewicz stuff is really coming out of left field. And
much of it unverified.
And the Kelly stuff, you know, there's a track of paid advertising right now talking about, you know, his answering the phone call from Andrew Hitt and talking about the fake electors and the January 6th stuff and the whole plot by Team Trump to overturn the 2020 election. And so association with those types of characters at least is still like in that same narrative space.
Take your Democratic strategist hat off and just be a strategist. He literally took your hat off. What's the most effective messaging from Kelly and what's the most effective messaging from Protasiewicz?
In the closing weeks?
Yeah.
I think Kelly is trying to do it. He has to knock Protasiewicz down. He can't just say, this is what I'm about, because she's ahead. So he's trying to, you know, pull her down, and he can't sort of go after what she's saying about things like abortion. So he has to go after the fact that she's saying them at all. That's about as good a strategy as you can have. It's just a tough one. And I think what she needs to do is run through the tape. I mean, she is, because of the disparity in spending, she is able to say, here's what I'm about, and here's why you shouldn't vote for my opponent. And to be able to two-track like that, I think that's pretty smart. And she's staying focused on, listen, women's access to reproductive health care is the number one issue in this race.
And I agree with you. I think that is the number one issue. I've told the story last week. I'll tell it again. I hear from conservative women who say, that is something that I have to step away from my political ideology and say, you know what? Even though I'm conservative on most everything else, on that one, they don't trust Kelly, and I think that might be the difference. Turnout is obviously, we talked about this last week when Bill was here. Turnout is going to be so key in this race.
It is, and everybody should know, early voting is now available in our house. We had a new voter this week.
Yeah, hold that story, because I want to talk about that. A brand new 18-year-old.
That's right.
I love that. We'll get to that and more with Joseph Pecky, my guest in studio on the Friday edition right here on WTMJ. Joseph Pecky joining me in studio on this Friday at WTMJ. Bill McCutcheon on assignment, as they say. Hope he's having a great day. We miss Bill because we enjoy the conversation.
Is he on a tropical assignment? Is he
I don't think he's having.
Is he ice fishing? Is he?
He has a very active life.
Is the Janesville Jets, you know, on a world tour?
You're on this hockey thing lately. Leave him alone in a hockey. Hockey's a great sport.
No, I think it's great.
Yeah, he's a hockey enthusiast.
Yeah, no, people should have passions.
They should.
I have passions.
We're not going to delve into that, but I'm sure that you do. All right, so you have a brand new 18-year-old
daughter, right? We celebrated a birthday last weekend, 18 years old, and one of the first things she wanted to do was go vote. And so we took her the second day of early voting, registered at the polls, you know, with a proof of residence and a proof of identification. Anyone who is 18 or older and eligible to vote can do that. The clerks were very polite and lovely, and like you could sense a set of excitement. They were frankly disappointed. I was disappointed. They didn't have the I voted stickers.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, so we didn't get to, you know, do the selfie with the I voted sticker. But she was excited to use her power.
Question. Yeah, I mean, are all people in her generation excited?
I think that's hard for me to answer because obviously in our household, given what my brother half and I do. Uh-huh. She certainly has more insight into the world of public affairs and politics than many kids do. But I will say, I get the sense that her generation, that her peers, they know more about politics generally and are more invested in it than some previous generations. And some of that stacks up with a book I just read by Philip Bump of the Washington Post. It's called The Aftermath, The Last Days of the Baby Boom and the Future of Power in America. And what they do is basically look at, you know, generationally, the silent generation, greatest generation, baby boom, X's, Z. And it turns out that the kids these days are pretty engaged compared to past generations. And I think that's great.
So the 18-year-olds are in what generation? The class of?
Z.
Z?
Yes.
Based on?
Well, X was, they like didn't know what to call the generation after.
Because they have baby boomers, after the baby kind of boomers. A fun name.
Yeah. So it's Gen X. And then for a while they referred to the millennial generation as Gen Y. And now, but
XYZ.
Now, yeah. So there you go.
It's boring.
Yeah. All and right. Then like the littlest kids right now, you know, our nieces and nephews, your grandkids.
Yeah.
Are they just going to start over at A?
A? Well, that's actually kind of cool. We're the A's.
Yeah, that's right.
You guys are way down in the alphabet. All right, he is Joseph Pecky. I am Steve, of course. Thanks for tuning in on this Friday. For those of us in Wisconsin, a snowy weekend ahead.
Perhaps.
I'm saying this is it.
This is the last one.
I want to drain the gas out after this weekend.
No snow for opening day.
Well, I'm working.
Fast approaching. You going to be there?
I will be there broadcasting live. I'm hosting the extravaganza.
Ooh,
yeah, okay. So very excited about that at the great mobile studio at American Family Field. All right, nice. So I love when the listeners... two things from the listeners.
Yeah.
Apparently, I'm not tough enough.
Me or just generally?
Generally.
Boy, they must not know you.
They miss Bill McCutcheon. I'm tough enough, trust me. Then we have a great listener question, which I'm going to have to try to find here real quickly. It had to do with...
what has to do with what the state Supreme Court has to do with abortion
The
1849
So
law.
Give me your answer.
So right now, so after the Dobbs decision invalidated Roe versus Wade,
correct.
Wisconsin reverted back to the 1849 law that does not have any exemptions other than the life of the mother. So rape, incest, you know, serious health challenges, off the table. Okay. As a response to that, the governor tried to, you know, basically codify Roe in state via the legislature. The Republican legislature said, no, thank you. The governor is now trying another approach to at least update from that 1849 law. And the legal theory, and they're in court right now, is that some of the abortion bills that were passed during Scott Walker's governorship.
Yeah, way more recently.
Yes, much more recently. So like within the last 10 or 15 years, that those bills superseded the 1849 law, and therefore there is a 20-week ban on abortion in Wisconsin, which would be closer to Roe versus Wade than the 1849 law. That case is making its way through the court and may ultimately end up before the state Supreme Court. So that's what the state Supreme Court may have to do when it comes to the issue of abortion.
And that's why April 4th, the decision made on who that justice is,
could have a really big impact.
Has relevance. Yep. So thanks for the question from the on the old National Bank talking text line. You can send them our way, 855-616-1620. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, because we're in this weird time of not really knowing what's going to happen. We have an idea of what's going to happen in these many court cases.
Yeah.
Are there many investigations into the conduct of the former president?
Yeah. Here's where I'm at on it, which is I'm about to wear a very different hat than I often wear. Not this Packer hat. That one's staying on this time. You know, listen, I think listeners know, I've been saying, no one is above the law. For this place to work, it doesn't matter if you're a president or not. If you committed a crime, you know, you gotta, air quotes, do the time. Where I am encouraged is it looks like, though they moved slowly, the wheels of justice are now about to say, you know what? We believe there was a crime committed here, and that means for me, I'm about to switch and say, now Donald J. Trump is innocent until proven guilty. Because if you believe in the rule of law, as I do, and I hope we all do, then you have to say, whoever you are, you have to face consequences for your actions in the legal system, whether you are a president or a senator or a governor or, you know, you're paving roads or you're an attorney, whatever it is. And everybody who is accused and charged of a crime gets their day in court. They get to make their case, and they are innocent until they are proven guilty. And we should all remember that, even when it comes to somebody whose politics we might not like most of the time and we think was a bad president. I don't care. He's an American. He gets his constitutional rights.
Totally agree. Do you think that, do you put any stock in the fact that they seem to be in a holding pattern in Manhattan? Is there any sort of a coordination, Department of Justice, on some of the other investigations? Is that what's going on here?
I doubt that. I think that's unusual for that level of state federal coordination. This isn't even state. It's literally local Manhattan.
Yeah, right.
And so
that's why people call it a witch hunt.
I don't think it's I think it's more likely that the Manhattan DA is doing everything they can to accommodate the former president's schedule and, you know, the oddities of his life, like a Secret Service detail. And so they're in communication. They're saying, hey, we're wrapping up. Do you want to come in and talk to us? No? Okay. Well, here's what's probably going to happen next. We got a contingency plan. And I think the former president heard, you know, like, it's not him on the phone with Bragg. It's his attorneys. And I think he probably got over his skis and said, oh, they're going to arrest me on Tuesday. And it's not the first time that we've heard the former president jump to a conclusion that turned out to not be true.
Of all the swirling investigations, we have that one, Mar-a-Lago documents case, which seems to be picking up steam. We certainly have this one with the payments. And I think the hook is campaign finance. Is that the hook?
Yeah, there's also some New York rules about how you categorize business expenses.
Yeah, and then we have the election interference one. There's also an old rape charge from many, many years ago.
That one's in civil court. That's not criminal.
Correct. Which one in your mind is the biggest one?
Well, the biggest one, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is the election stuff.
Right. Georgia.
I think that's maybe the hardest one to prove or to sort of, you know, make the case for.
A phone call saying I want 11,000 or 12,000 votes isn't enough?
I think that is a crime where sort of state of mind comes into play. And I think that's really, really, that's tougher than something that is literally black and white, you know, written down like financial transactions. Or in the case of the classified documents case, where it's just like cut and dried. Like, you weren't supposed to have these and you had them and they were found by, you know, the officials who walked through Mar-a-Lago. So I just think those are more cut and dried. I think there's more gray area in the election stuff. To me, the most offensive conduct, of course, was his behavior after the 2020 election. Whether or not that was a crime, whether or not any jury anywhere would, you know, unanimously conclude that he was in the state of mind to intentionally undermine the will of the voters, I just think that's a tougher case to make.
There's three kinds of people. Those that hate Trump, those that love Trump, and those that voted for Trump but would like to see him go away. How big is that last group?
I think it's growing by the day. I mean, I think that's that to me is the takeaway. And like the political nonsense about this is just crazy. Like, I don't understand what Republicans are doing, rushing to defend the former president and, you know, indict the local prosecutor. I'll just do one example. Like when Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky says, you know, District Attorney Bragg is grossly abusing government power.
Put him in jail.
He should be put in jail.
Yeah.
Are you listening to yourself? And like, and we don't know if an indictment is going to come.
They don't get the irony of that statement.
And we don't know what the indictment is going to be for. It may very well be that in examining the hush money payment, they found some other financial stuff that is a crime. We just don't know. And so Republicans who are rushing to defend him, I don't get it. How about you hold your fire and see what happens? And then if you want to try to, you know, intimidate or ask questions of the prosecutor, like, okay, but this rush to defend this before there's even anything to defend, I don't get it.
What about the arguments that all of this helps Trump?
I don't think it's ever a good thing to be indicted. You can listen, I've spun some yarns in my day working for politicians. It is never a good idea to be indicted.
Poll suggests his numbers are going up.
And those are Republican primary voter polls. That is the rightmost 30% of the American population. And so once you start splitting that up to 40% of that, we are talking about a small group of people. It gets back to your groups of people, people who are fine with Trump but are sick of him and want him to go away. That group gets bigger every day. The story is reminding us about all the noise and the chaos associated with that presidency, whether you agreed or disagreed with the policies. It's an awful lot of noise. It was awfully exhausting, and it wasn't very much presidential behavior.
He is Joseph Pecky. We're minus a Bill McCosian today. I'm doing my best, but Bill will rejoin us next week. We'll take a break. Wrap up. No, not wrap up the hour. We still got 15 minutes. We'll get to some other topics, and your questions are welcome. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank. Talk and text line on WTMJ. We'll do a quick segment here. We had a listener question about, what was that listener question about again? We
were talking Hunter Biden.
Hunter Biden. Okay, so any exposure for current President Joe Biden on Hunter Biden's story, money between the family and China?
I doubt it, but I have no doubt that Republicans in Congress are going to get to the bottom of it. And I'm sorry to be a little like snide about it, but here's what the body language from the White House and from President Biden is like, okay, you want to look? Go look. You know what? This president hasn't done, he decided, they literally said, we don't need to establish a legal defense fund. You know what that tells me? There's no there. If they were worried about this at all, they would be lawyering up like Donald Trump has to do.
You don't think there's any possibility that Hunter Biden did something illegal and that it may be tied to the president? Because I think that's a fair question.
Yes, it is a fair question, and it will be investigated. It is being investigated. And I think if you want to indict Joe Biden for being guilty of being a father to a kid who fell in some troubled times, okay, but that's different than financial crimes that there are ledgers about. That's, you know, hush money.
Well, like, let's be fair. It would be your father, who's a vice president of the United States or president of the United States,
sure,
giving you unfair advantages or being involved in a financial benefit to his child.
This is what we talked about in the last one, where I'm willing to say the January 6th stuff, the election stuff, the state of mind. You're going to convince a jury of peers that, you know, unanimously, that Joe Biden wasn't just trying to be a good father. Good luck. I don't think the Bidens are afraid of it because I don't think they did anything wrong. Well, and
it's going to be investigated.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
Yeah, and we should. Like, listen, I got no problem with investigations, even when, you know, they can go sideways like they did for Hillary Clinton. But
I did some time on the show yesterday about the ballot questions in Wisconsin. One of the listeners on the old National Bank text line. Love to hear your take on some of these questions.
So there's three of them. We voted early, so let's see real quick if we can do this. So
bail reform.
The bail reform I was for. I love it that Republicans have come around to Mandela Barnes's position on this, which is it shouldn't just be whether you can write the check. Judges should be able to look at all factors. That's great. Another one was on able-bodied adults without children have to be looking for work to get state benefits.
Mm-hmm.
That's the law right now. It's the most disingenuous ballot question
unenforced
you can imagine. Maybe during COVID, was that part of the emergency? Listen, if you don't have kids and you're able-bodied, do I think you should? Yes, you should. But it's a pretty ridiculous question. What was the third one?
I'm trying to think. I'll look it up during the break.
Okay.
We'll take a break. We got Grab Bag coming up. Joe Zepecki, my guest in studio, right here at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Just looking up during the break, so there's two constitutional amendment questions. One is the condition of release for an accused individual before conviction. The other one's cash bail, and of course the other one is on the welfare question,
yeah.
Put it simply. So I voted yes on all three.
Yeah, we got there.
Yeah.
We figured it out. We just thought it was one question instead of two.
Yeah, and I said yesterday, a lot of people I know that are liberals also voted yes, so I think the results are going to be pretty clear, and I think those are smart questions. Grab Bag on this Friday.
Yeah, yesterday, March 23rd, 2023, was the 13th anniversary of the Affordable Care Act being passed into law. Was honored to have a great event with Governor Evers and three Wisconsinites who have benefited from that law. Listen, nobody is here to say that our healthcare system is perfect. We know we still have a lot of work to do. But there's just no denying 13 years later that the Affordable Care Act changed the healthcare system in really profound ways, like making sure you couldn't be discriminated against if you had a pre-existing condition, that you would be able to be covered. And so thank you to Governor Evers for celebrating and marking that momentous occasion with us. Thank you to the Wisconsinites who joined us. We had Chad and Mary and Katarina, great advocates, you know, basically saying, listen, people should be able to afford health insurance. We're able to do that thanks to the ACA. And it was a nice event.
I got a really specific question on that. I made this point yesterday, so I'm not sure if this was tied to the Affordable
Care Act.
ACA.
Obamacare.
Yes. Coverage for your children to the age of 26 was
yes.
I don't like that.
Really?
I think it has encouraged
freeloading kids in the basement?
Young adults to be basement dwellers and not go work.
Well, listen, there's nothing that says parents have to keep them on. They get a say in it, but there are parents who would like to have their kids, you know, have some flexibility at the start of their career, maybe pursue passions as opposed to going to work for the big company in town where they offer health insurance.
I'm not talking about like, dislike. I'm talking about has a direct impact on our workforce, where if you have people providing for you and you have a very comfortable environment that you're very used to because they're your parents, it's the basement you grew up with, why would you go out on your own?
Well, here's what I'll say. Of course, you're entitled to that opinion, but it didn't actually change anything in Wisconsin. Because Wisconsin, you already could do that. What the Affordable Care Act did was it expanded that nationwide. So it's not like 14 years ago, there were a bunch of 19 to 25-year-olds in Wisconsin who didn't have that. And that's part of our current workforce challenge, if you follow me.
I just think we got to start thinking about these things, big picture these stories.
Great. You want more workers? I want more workers. You want to save Social Security and Medicare? Let's open up immigration. Legal immigration to this country is at its lowest point in decades, and it's killing this country.
I have a plan. Enforce the border strictly and find a path for those people who are here to be citizens. That's it. But we have politicians on both sides who just fuddle around with this forever.
Got to get it done.
All right.
So we could get it done.
We could.
Send us to Congress.
Yes. Well, I don't want the job. I want the pay cut. Just kidding. All right. So real quick, because I heard about the sports guys over at ESPN 94.5 kicking this one around.
Yeah.
Over and under on Packer wins next season.
Did they set a number and I have to go over or under?
Theirs was, I think, 5.5.
Over.
Really?
Yeah. No doubt. It's still a talented roster. I'm not saying they're going to win 13 games.
They said it wasn't a talented roster, and they're sports people.
The Detroit Lions could win 6 games, right?
Hey, don't kick the Lions. They beat the Packers.
I'm the one who said that was likely going to happen. Brandon remembers. I know, but
I don't recall that. Stop with that. I don't recall that at all.
They'll win more than 5.5 games.
The Packers will win more than 5.5 games.
This is not a full blown.
That's
kind of
like where I'm at, 5-6.
I could see him going 7-10.
Not nine and eight or anything like that.
It would be overperformance for him to get above 500. But I don't think they're going to.
Are you done with Rodgers? You finished?
Yeah, I wish him well. I thank him for a great run.
Yeah.
It's time to move on.
Go to New York.
Sometimes that happens in relationships.
I imagine a guy who's single would have fun in New York. I mean, Joe Namath had a blast.
That's right.
Albeit it was, 50 years ago. I'm sure it's still fun. Joe Zepecki, thanks for doing it minus Bill McCosh. And Bill, we missed you. We'll tee it up again next
Friday. See you next week. No backwards hat. I'm just going to tease it.
All right. It will be maybe be on TV. The news is next.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to 10 o'clock hour on this Friday edition. Almost off to the weekend, and for those of us in southeastern Wisconsin, that four-letter word we can say on the radio, but I don't want to. The white stuff, frozen water, yes. But set that aside. I've had the pleasure over the last year of filling in occasionally in the 8 o'clock hour when Bilstead's gone or Vachano's gone, and I'll be doing that for the next, I did it today and the next week's worth of shows for the Wisconsin Morning News program. And we're Vince and I this morning, we're talking about TikTok. The big guy from TikTok at a congressional hearing yesterday, talking about the state of affairs of a platform, social media service, that essentially provides a place for user-distributed videos, something you filmed, recorded, and that you post. Now, if you listen to the show, you know I'm not on TikTok, and I'm not a huge fan of that. And there's a couple points I want to make about it, but I'd love to hear what you have to say, 855-616-1620. I made him a show poll today as well. And I'll ask it, and you can find it at 620 WTMJ or at WTMJ Steve. TikTok, the popular social media service featuring user-submitted videos, is under fire for privacy concerns and its connections to the Chinese government. What would your reaction be if it was banned in the United States? And I gave you a few choices. And I have 200 votes already, so well done you. Keep it coming. Couldn't care less, nearly 67%, two-thirds, almost right on the head. Say, couldn't care less. Next one, I love it, leave it alone, 10%. About what I would expect it. Not sure that would work, so people just have a question about how that might play out, and I'll get to another story in a second about that question as well. About 20% of you. So I pose it to you, 855-616-1620. Let's say it was banned. They said, no, we're not taking the chances. There's too much data concern. The CEO pushed back against the idea that maybe the Chinese government was looking at U.S. users' data. But what's he going to say? Yeah, they're doing it. What do you want to know about it? He's not going to say that. He doesn't have any liability. But I also was thinking of another question that is actually more fascinating to me. And those of us over the last, I don't know, how long have selfies been a thing? 10 years, a decade? I'll have to look that up during the break. The desire, and I do it occasionally, I usually typically only do it on vacation, because my wife, Kathy, and I, when we travel, we like to have a famous thing like the Eiffel Tower or the Acropolis behind us, then take a picture. That's my only time I selfie. But if you're a fan of anybody in media, some people are addicted to it. And I think it's given rise to people's desire to see their picture and to distribute their picture. Young people especially. We could call it the selfie generation. And when I was thinking about TikTok in that respect, the rise of the selfie generation, the rise of selfies in general. I'm not surprised that TikTok's popular, because what's the next generation of selfie? A picture, a individual snapshot. It's a video of varying length where you're doing the exact same thing you're doing in the picture, but in a goofy way, or, you know, sometimes informative, I guess, especially for some members of the media. It's just the next step. We went from an individual picture to now a video. I wish I would have thought of it. Been around since 2016. 2 billion downloads. Very popular. Rome joins us from Milwaukee. Hey, Rome.
Hey, I'm not in Milwaukee today. I'm actually in spring break here headed towards Pennsylvania, currently in Indiana. But you guys deal with that snow, and I'll be thinking about you.
All right, let me ask this question before you get to the TikTok thing. So you're spring breaking in Pennsylvania.
I'm actually spring breaking in South Carolina. I'm going to Pennsylvania to visit family first.
I got it. South Carolina makes sense.
Yeah, we're going to Pennsylvania for families. On family matters.
Love it. Okay, so on TikTok, the question at hand, what do you think?
Well, I have a grandson that uses TikTok daily. And my thing is I know that, you know, I have mixed emotions. Me personally, I would think there needs to be parental controls. Someone had mentioned about having, you know, a time limit where, you know, like at 10 o'clock at night, it goes off until 7 in the morning or something. That way kids aren't accessing it, you know, at late at night or whatever, mm-hmm. when they should be asleep. But I think that, you know, for entertainment purposes, it's all right. But I do think it is dumbing down America. We're spending too much time on that type of thing rather than trying to get some real knowledge about things. But then you got some people making money, so mixed emotions about it.
Rome, what about the security questions, whether the data is protected, whether it's being shared with the Chinese?
I totally agree. Okay. I agree that, you know, there is security questions with that, and I think our government needs to find a way to circumvent that if possible. If it's something that they feel they can't be circumvented, then go ahead on. Get rid of it.
But you would, but other than that, if they could do that, then no to the ban. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
All right.
Right. I'd say just minimize the amount of time that kids are exposed to it, because I know my grandson gets about 2 or 3 hours a day on it. And it's a fun thing for him, but at the same time, he could be doing more valuable things with that time.
I totally agree. Thanks for the call, Rome, and safe travels on your way to South Carolina. I'm going to take a break, and there's a story that kind of plays into this TikTok story, which I actually was stunned when I saw this, and it has to do with the actions of a state and social media generally, not just TikTok, and what one state in our country is deciding to do about it. Love to hear from you, 855-616-1620. We heard from Rome. The subject of TikTok, I think this is all a natural extension of the selfie generation. And that's my term, not anybody else's. Where the satisfaction of taking a picture has been replaced by the satisfaction and, in some cases, the irritants of a video, short or otherwise. We'll take your calls, read your texts after this on WTMJ. Lots of noise about TikTok. Is it going to go away? Going to be banned? Going to be changed? Are they going to restrict the Chinese government's access to it? I said this the other day. I would have zero problems if it went away because I'm not on TikTok. I got enough to worry about with Twitter and Facebook. I don't need another thing. But I also know, as Rome pointed out there, that lots of young people enjoy the experience. And frankly, even some older people as well. Sam joins us on the Old National Bank Talk and Text Line. Hey, Sam, happy Friday to you.
Happy weekend to you too, Steve.
What do you think?
TikTok, as far as I'm concerned, they play on the lowest common denominator of human behavior to get through that door to get into our lives. And I just use this as a discussion on the whole Chinese relationship, whether it's the trade, the economy. They're getting into every country around the world, and it's really reached a point where it's just dangerous now.
I don't think people understand TikTok, how dangerous it is, Sam. I don't think they get it. They think it's fun, therefore they don't worry about it.
The young people, like you said, the young people get fooled by this stuff real easy, and it's fun, and it's cool, and all that, but they don't, you know, yesterday the Chinese government, they came out and they said, no, they don't want to, you know, end this TikTok thing. What does that tell you right there?
They don't want to lose that access.
Exactly.
Yeah, Sam, thanks for the call. Look, is it fun? Sure. But, you know, there's a lot of people, I think, like me. And I try not to be the grouchy old man in the room. One, because I'm not old, and two, I'm not that grouchy all the time. Producer laughing at me. Look, I think there are legitimate concerns here, and I haven't even gotten to the story from Utah that I'll get to momentarily here. There's a lot of eyes on TikTok. There's a lot of eyes on social media, and I did a piece the other day about the impact on young people of their lives being consumed not by education, not by family, not by faith. You're a person or a family of faith, but by entertainment. In this case, individual entertainment for the most part, when they're by themselves, at home, on their device, that aren't constructive, aren't helpful, in some cases dangerous, i.e. the rising rate of teen suicides, which I talked about. The impact on IQ, which I talked about yesterday on the show. It is significant, regardless of your opinion about TikTok, that for 100 years, our IQ levels in the world and in this country only went up. It's called the Flynn effect. Look it up. Every decade or so, ticked up a notch. And then, boom, social media happens. What happens? I don't know, cause and effect? IQ's dropping in the United States. Doesn't that raise an eyebrow? Doesn't that make you concerned? Which leads me to Utah. The governor of the state of Utah yesterday, Spencer Cox, Republican, signed legislation yesterday prohibiting minors from using social media without parental consent. It's the most sweeping regulation impacting kids and teens' internet use ever. And you think, just on its face, how would this work? Well, I don't think they know how it's going to work, but it shows a responsible reaction to the dangers that sort of get pushed aside because of the fun stuff. And I'm not excusing parents who are frankly also playing this stupid game, that's what I call it, of making stupid videos, dancing around. Now, they're not all that. There's some educational stuff on there. And there's news value as well, as Vince said. You're contributing to this nonsense. The link of smartphone, essentially, you might as well just stick it in your body because that's how close it's connected now. It's tethered, even though it's supposed to be not so. Governor Cox, two bills. Requiring social media companies to verify a user's age. Setting a 10:30 p.m. to 6:30 a.m. curfew where minors will be locked out of their accounts unless a parent disables the feature. So parents still have rights. That shouldn't be surprising. The new law also, this is a big one, trust me on this one. The new law also gives parents access to their children's posts and private messages. You talk about a audible shock wave, that would be it. I think most parents would be shocked if they saw what their kids were posting or messaging. And these platforms would be banned from using algorithms that would potentially addict those minors and teens to that app. Why did they do this in Utah? First of its kind. Cited mental health crisis. Even though a lot of that's up for debates, not clear. Lawmakers in Connecticut, Ohio, working on similar bills. It's not a partisan issue. President Joe Biden, last time I checked, a Democrat. In his State of the Union speech, his words, his quote, strengthen privacy protections, ban targeted advertising to children, demand tech companies stop collecting personal data on our children. Those are the words of the president from his State of the Union. And as I said on a different topic yesterday, this is what government and leaders should be doing. Now, again, the proof is in the pudding, right? How is this going to be implemented? Is it going to work? Can you actually do this? And I would say to those naysayers, well, we have technology. Let's use it for good. 855-616-1620. CEO of TikTok testifies at a congressional hearing. States are now saying, you know what? No. And the other big pieces, will parents join in that effort or will they just say, oh, can't do nothing about it. Kids are kids. Is that going to be the response? I hope not. More after this. Big question. TikTok, what's going to happen to it? Concerns about privacy? Chinese government stealing our information? Somebody asked me about what are they stealing? Oh, I don't know. Access to banking information, address, phone, emails. which can contribute to things like scamming, identity theft, which is a huge, massive problem already in this country, that we don't need more help or providing more help to other places and countries to get involved. Julie joins us on the Old National Bank Talk and Text Line. Hi, Julie.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I am good. What do you think on this?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting that the Utah governor is making these laws. On the one hand, I say parents buy the phones. You own your kids' phones. And you have the right as a parent to restrict what your kid watches, how late they watch it, the extent to which they watch it. But if a governor is going to say, let's make this a mandate, I just think that's really interesting.
Well, he does give the parents an ability to opt out under their legislation, so he has built that in. But I think the interesting thing for me is this is where parenting really matters, because we have seen the explosion of kids with smartphones and accessing things that maybe kids, teens, shouldn't have access to.
Absolutely. And parents need to be moderating their kids' phones. You mentioned, Steve, the mental health crisis.
Mm-hmm.
This is a pandemic of mental health. I work in the field. And I think the most recent, one of the best research articles is by Boston College. Since COVID, we have a 50% increase in anxiety and a 44% increase in depression.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is a pandemic.
I agree with you, Julie.
Yeah, parents need to be aware of what is going on with your kids' social media. It's the parents' responsibility to say, "Look, I bought you this phone. I can take it out anytime." You know, parents need to be.
Absolutely. Sorry. Yeah, no, Julie, it's a brilliant point, and we need parents to be parents, and I appreciate you taking the time to call. Well, stay on this, because there's a lot of people who want to weigh in, and I got a ton of texts on this. Look, here's another one of those bright, shining moments when parents got to be parents. They got to do better. Is parenting easy? Hell no. But can you make better decisions? Yeah, of course you can. You want to show me a bad kid? The biggest reason why that's a bad kid is because he's got bad parents. That's not even debatable anymore. It's not absolute, but it's not debatable. Parents got a parent here, and one of the ways they can get involved in this is to not wait for Utah or Connecticut or Ohio to pass a law that says you should do this. You can make those decisions, as Julie so eloquently said, on your own. And by the way, I love callers and fans of the show who do their own research. She was citing Boston College in there. Great job, Julie. All right. If you just joined in, we're talking about the TikTok experience, right? So we had the CEO of TikTok testifying in front of Congress at a hearing yesterday, pushing back on this idea that the government's mining our data, personal data, banking info, address, geographic location. Why would that matter? I don't know. There's certainly tactical reasons why that's important. And maybe even economic and financial reasons why that makes sense. So there's concerns, but beyond that, and our last caller, Julie, highlighted, there's a concern for parents on the mental health side of things, right? Overuse of smartphones, addiction to platforms, services like TikTok and Twitter. And I have a ton of texts on this. I want to give the texters some love on the Old National Bank Talk and text on 855-616-1620-262. Honestly, I'd get a lot of wasted time back without TikTok. Someone please take it away from me. And yes, I could and should uninstall. There's probably a lot of people that feel that way. They do become, even for adults, addictive. From the 262, isn't the entire day of the smartphone a security issue anyway? iPhones are listening to us all the time, so what's the difference between that and TikTok? I think there's a greater risk with an ability to actually just tap into your data that you've provided in many cases. The algorithms that can detect where you go, what you buy, opinions that you express. I think there's significant value to that. And I think that's part of the fear. And I mentioned the governmental responsibility, one, a hearing, but two, states like Utah, Connecticut, Ohio, starting to say to parents, look, this is something you got to pay attention to. Now, in the Utah example provided, they have given parents an out. If they don't want to, they don't have to. They can just give the kids a smartphone, and then they will obviously do what they want with it. From the text line, Old National Bank talking text line, Utah, and as much as Idaho, is controlled by Mormons, and they're very driven by family values and education of our children. Hence, it's no surprise to me that they would pass state legislation to restrict social media use they deem to be a negative influence on children and family quality time. It's more than that. And yeah, there's certainly a faith component to that, and I'm not going to deny that. But this is an ongoing debate outside of Mormons or people of faith. Significant impact. I did an hour on educational impact of smartphones. That it's so hard in this country to say no anymore. To just say, that's not appropriate for a school environment. We are essentially saying anything goes. And what's the result? Kids aren't showing up. When they do show up, they're not listening. When they're there, they're not being educated because they're not paying attention. They're looking at their smartphone. It is mind-boggling to me that we actually allow kids to access their smartphones in class. I don't think that's a positive for education. I've been really clear about that. What do you think? 855-616-1620, the Old National Bank talking. Text line 262. See, the TikTok debate highlights the bigger issue of data privacy that needs to be addressed in this country. Let's be real. The other social giants are no better and have their own foreign backers. Unfortunately, nothing substantial will ever get done till we get the dinosaurs off the committees. I don't know. I don't know about that. I think there's an awareness from everybody. I said this is not a partisan issue. It shouldn't be anymore. It's hurting people. When we see declines in IQ, when we see young people taking their own lives, not just young people, older Americans as well, because of the overwhelming nature of what social media and access to things you typically weren't exposed to before, on the negative side, can do to your well-being, that's not surprising. And I think it's appropriate for both individuals and families, as well as government entities, to look at these problems and say, you know what? We can do something about this. From the text line, kids are pretty smart. They will put VPNs on their phones and computers, and they will still have all of their social media platforms. Yeah, everything can be backdoored. Everything can be figured out. I'm not saying that's not the case. Except if there's an all-out ban. Then it's going to be a lot harder for kids to figure that part out. Steve, to start off, I'm not on TikTok. When Musk bought Twitter, he revealed that our government censored information content regarding Biden and others. I read that the same is true about Facebook and other U.S.-based social media platforms. No idea if this is accurate, just internet reading. Is there any truth about how governments can't control TikTok content, thus they want it banned? It's an interesting theory. I have no idea. But I will say this. And this is easy for me to say because I do a radio show. I read a lot, kind of understand the issues. Certainly life experiences help in that. I can separate the nonsense generally from the real stuff. But that's not true for everybody. Trust me. I read all the texts. I read the emails. There are people send me emails. I'm actually going to do a segment. Maybe we'll do it next week with Carol. Listener email. I won't identify the sender, but the things that are said that are just factually incorrect, but yet the sender has such strong conviction about it. And I always say thanks for the feedback. You know, it's if it's a point of easy clarity, I'll say this is not true, and I'll say why usually. But that's the state of affairs. And if social media access to the internet and smartphones are contributing to that, why wouldn't we want to safeguard some of these things? Scott joins us from South Milwaukee. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure.
On this topic about cell phones in schools, again, I'm in my mid-40s, all right? I can remember, again, when I was in school, K through 12, cell phones were not the thing. They weren't in vogue. They weren't even really popular. But looking back, I cannot recall a single instance where it was so imperative that I would have needed to have a cell phone at my disposal while I was in the classroom and having to pay attention for learning purposes. I mean, I could see whatever happened, because that was back in the day when you needed to get a hold of your parents, you use the payphone. I mean, I can see those instances where cell phones are valuable nowadays. But I totally agree with your position that once a student walks in that school, the cell phone should be either in the backpack or whatever, or in their locker, and not accessible while they're in a classroom setting.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Scott. It's not about that anymore. Set the smartphone aside, put it in your backpack, or don't bring it to school at all. I had this debate with one of our other hosts here at WTMJ, not this year, last year. Nobody is that important unless you're involved in public safety or a high-level leadership position where your contact, your answer to a question is second to second. You're not that important. I don't care who you are. Your kid's schedule is not that important. You'll figure it out. If there's an emergency, there's a phone number to the school. I'm pretty sure they'll get that student the information. You hand off that responsibility of your child when you drop them off at school or the bus takes them to school. They're in charge of that situation. As far as I can tell, there's no written thing in our state's constitution or in the Bill of Rights of our country that says parents have to be able to bother their kids by smartphone anytime they want to during the day. Nope, doesn't exist. You don't need that access. Actually, you're hurting your child. This is where the parenting thing kicks in. You got to be a better parent. At the time when it's the most difficult job you could probably have, given all the exterior, or external rather, things happening that can impact the simple act of being educated. Parents got a parent. And I get fired up about it because it's silly that we're having this debate. They don't belong in school. They should have never been allowed in school in the first place. And now we're arguing about this as if it's somehow a right to have instant access to your kid. No, you don't. Show me where it says that. And if parents won't do it, this is kind of the big point, if parents aren't going to do it, well, then you shouldn't be surprised when governments say, you know what? We got kids dying. We got kids killing themselves. We have kids not learning. We have governments, not ours, stealing people's personal information, banking information, location. We're going to step in. Just like a parent who said it's okay for the kids to drink when they're not old enough, we're going to step in. We're going to say, no, that's not okay. So parents, you shouldn't be surprised. That's why these things are happening. Social media, TikTok, should we ban it? States are saying, you know what, we're going to restrict it. Any social media platform, in the case of Utah, children, young adults, parents, all have a role to play. Let's talk to Tony calling from Watertown. Welcome to the show, Tony. Happy Friday to you.
How you doing today?
I am good. How are you?
Okay, so I'm listening to you, and I agree with you, you know, like 100% on kids with the phones in school. But here's the problem that came to my thoughts when you were listening to you. So many guns nowadays, school shootings. I'm thinking, boy, if my kid had a phone that if something happened that they can call 911, whether it's a big fight in the classroom or someone with a gun or a knife, that they have it. Now, I agree it shouldn't be in school, but shouldn't be using it in school is what I'm thinking. That's the only thing I think about I hear what you're saying about
it's a fair question, Tony, and I appreciate it. I didn't mean to talk over you there. It's a fair question, and let me answer for you, and thanks for the call. Look, I've heard this a lot. What about emergencies? School shootings? The urgency of the messaging, right? There's somebody with a gun in our school. He's shooting at kids, teachers, staff. Well, let's look at it from the law enforcement side. So we're getting hundreds of phone calls. Some students who are directly involved may know something. Other ones may know nothing. They hear something, and they're reporting it. Wouldn't you think that maybe a teacher could call 911 or staff could call 911? Do we need hundreds or thousands of students calling 911? How do we think that benefits the community? How do we think that benefits public safety? It doesn't. It adds confusion. Why do I know this? Because I lived the story. We had a mass shooting, 2012, Oak Creek. You get so many conflicting 911 calls, it makes it more difficult. Is 911 important? Absolutely. And so is that immediate public safety response. But we don't need 1,000 calls. We need one call that says something's happening. Here's what I see. Here's what I know. So I don't buy into the every parent has a right to know what's going on every moment of the day. That's why you entrust kids to schools. That's why you elect school boards that do the best thing for your students who are out of your charge during the day when they're supposed to be learning. It's an interference. And I'll make a point before I go to break here. This is the problem. Like anything, if someone's not doing what they're supposed to be doing, whether that's a judge when you're talking about street crime, whether that's a parent who allows their kid to drink, whether that's a smartphone being given to a kid by a parent, and then they can use it whenever they want, however they want, in a school, bullying each other, causing more strife, more angst, more negativity, more depression than is needed in that environment, then someone's going to have to step in and do something about it. There are rules in this country. There are rules and laws because not everybody does the right thing. The question on TikTok and social media and parenting is, what are we going to do about this? Or are we going to let it just happen in front of our eyes and just throw up our hands and say, can't do nothing about it? How's that work for gun violence, by the way? The can't do anything about it thing. How's that working out for us? The answer is not very well.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Friday show, everybody. Those of you who are regular listeners know that I almost every Friday have my If the Seaver of the World segment. Now, somebody might ask, with opening day looming a week away, less than a week, why don't you do a baseball one? Because I did one like a month ago. That would, and was kind of my prelude to opening day. But I'll probably cook one up next Friday just because we're then looking forward to the home opener. So I'll give you a little flavor of what it's like to be a Brewers fan and the baseball experience, sitting at a game, broadcasting from a game. So we'll cook that into the next one. But I thought, you know, I've been talking a lot about people's reaction to stories. I will say this, and I mentioned this yesterday on the program. And thanks for joining us, by the way, however you find us over the year. Online podcast, you guys are killing my podcast page. Love it. I said this, that the listener response lately has been amazing. Really great stuff, great feedback. That's why I give out my email address, steve.scafidi2s1d@wtmj.com. Certainly the phone number, Old National Bank talk and text line 855-616-1620. And the feedback has been great, and I appreciate that. But I know not everybody's happy. I know there are angry people out there. And I do this like once or twice a year, just kind of refresh. And you'll recognize some of the things we do at the end of my little, my wife calls them rants, but I don't call them that. I call it wisdom. So you'll notice some familiar things, but it's a kind of a refresher course on controlling. I use a more specific thing. It's anger management, but I call it controlling your radio anger. Let's go.
Steve, rule the world.
start with the easy one first. You know people have an anger management problem? You know how you have one? If you listen to a radio show and your first response is to text the following, you are an and I wish you were dead. And that's not the way you should be talking to a show. A bit strong, don't you think? I think so. You know you have an anger management problem if you're on social media and you're on a post about someone else's post is, you know, if so-and-so party have their way, we'll all be dead in a year. Extremism much? And you know you have an anger management problem when you're paid to be a radio host and all you ever do is complain. Not one iota of common sense. That's an underused word, iota. I'm going to bring that back. Not one iota of common sense, logic, or actual solutions to problems. Just the same repetitive complaining. Year, hours after hours, year after year, same old shtick. I have to say that carefully. Citing listener emails, calling out some office policy nobody else cares about, forgetting the name of the local paper, which is, as I say over and over again, the Journal Sentinel, by the way. Phone calls never returned by CEOs. They're busy! And devoting large segments of your show to reading political party talking points. Not a fan. Loud doesn't mean smarts. Let me say that again. Loud doesn't mean smarts. And saying the same thing over and over again doesn't make it true. Listening is a skill. And that applies to your choice of radio shows as well.
Lighten up, Francis.
It's Steve. Rule the world.
That hurt my feelings right out of the gate there, Brandon. Here's one that everybody can do. We should all practice this simple gesture. If you typically respond to a friendly greeting, or post for that matter, with a comment related to politics, class warfare, systemic racism, mass mandates, taxes, how much better your sports team is, or how awful somebody is that you never even met or talked to, you definitely need to take a class in anger management. We'll call this the Greg from Facebook rule, which has been a rule for quite a few years on this show. It's basically a cry for help, often disguised as a snarky post or a response lacking any relevance or connection to the topic at hand or the post at hand. There's also a good life lesson here as well. If your existence revolves around posting negative things on social media, and let's be honest, far too many people, that's their only public persona, might be a good time to seek some professional help. Most insurance companies pay for this now. Some employers let you take a sad day at work. That's if you actually have a job, since most employers require their employee to have some degree of rudimentary social skills now. Better yet, if you're perpetually angry, don't hit send on anything your brain hasn't composed itself. I'm not saying it's dumb. I'm saying if your not-so-clever insight was set to music, you know what's coming, don't you? It might come off sounding just like this. Just a hint, folks, that's not a positive. Okay, a few words on why people are so angry. I get it. You may have lost your job or your business. Your girlfriend could have dumped you because you insisted on going to Country Thunder with thousands of other people unvaccinated. Now you got COVID bad and you're facing a hospital visit you can't pay for. And soon they're going to make you wear a mask at work and not go to work. Maybe you're still mad that Trump lost the election, although come on, give it a break. It's been some time. Despite all the failed lawsuits, forensic audits, or taxpayer-funded investigations that continue to this day, people. Truth is, you can walk around angry all the time. You can walk into a Meijer store and shout like a lunatic at the top of your lungs about your loss of personal freedom, or last time I checked, nobody is stopping you from buying that 30-pack of Busch Light, are they? Or panic buying 1,000 rounds of ammunition, or camping out in front of your 50-incher and logging the conspiracy theory websites. That's not, nothing's changed there. But ultimately, science tells us that all that stress and anxiety can kill you. So what would you rather have? A longer life or the chance to text crazy comments to a radio show? Seems like an easy choice, no?
You can't handle the truth.
If Steve ruled the world.
And that is true. Call this one. Thank you, Jack Nicholson. Call this one, create your own anger management rule. What if I told you that one of the easiest tricks to avoid being angry is just stick with sentences of being with I. Make it about yourself. Right? I think your refusal to act like a normal person on social media or the text line is actually representative of a much larger psychological problem that could, if untreated, result in serious mental health issues down the road. Here's another one. When you hear radio squawkers saying, this goes for TV squawkers too, saying things you know aren't true just because they know that's what your political party wants you to think, ask yourself this question. What would Donald Trump do? Now, that's a lot different than what would Jesus do, but let's be honest. For some folks, the same level of devotion is required. Whatever the answer is, do the opposite. Ironically, the same thing works if you substitute Joe Biden for Donald Trump in that equation. Don't you love politics? I think John Rich has the right idea.
Shut up about politics. Ain't nothing but a big pile of dirty tricks. Tired of all the fighting and a pitching fit, so shut up about politics. You punch left, I punch right. We're caught up in the middle of a deep swamp fight. Some people lie, some people steal, and everybody's talking about the Green New Deal. Shut up about politics. Ain't nothing but a big pile of dirty tricks.
If Steve ruled the world.
Thank you, John Rich. He's a hell of a singer there. Have I mentioned it's one of the things I don't like about angry people is they generally are fun suckers. Nothing takes the fun out of a party more than the guy or girl who thinks they know everything or are usually, because they're usually the grumpiest people in the room. We all know people like this, and unfortunately talk radio is full of fun suckers. Another phrase that's hard to say. Who think the answer to everything comes out of their mouth. When most of these knuckleheads have resumes that consist of one thing, doing talk radio. No work experience. No wisdom gleaned from anything other than saying things into a microphone. Best fix for angry, fun-sucking people, ignore them. Like, turn off the radio. Not this show. Change the channel. Ignore. You know what else will suck the fun out of the party? If the only beer you have is Busch Lights.
Come on, alone, head for the mountains of Busch Beer. Head for the mountains, it's cold and it's smooth, and it's waiting for you. Come on, head for the mountains of Busch Beer. Head for the mountains of Busch. Head for the mountains of Busch Light Beer.
It's Steve.
Ruled the world. We had to get all that in. That's so good. That's old school. People still drink Busch and Busch Light. My goodness. Why? I think Aaron Rodgers had it right when he said in his press conference the other day that the only good radio you find is the kind you hear at 9:08 in the morning on WTMJ. Did I just say that? Yes, I did. It's obvious. At least that was my takeaway. And listening is a skill, especially when you're talking about radio. What would you rather have? Someone shouting at you. Let me rephrase. Someone shouting at you for 3 hours on the radio, pretending they are experts, or a calm, reassuring voice that tells you the only real expert on anything is you. And that most politicians, as well as most radio hosts, are a complete waste of your time. Unless you're an election or vax denier, then you must listen to these all-important words. You know what's coming from Aaron Rodgers, because clearly you, my friend, are wound too tight.
Five letters here. Just for everybody out there in Packerland and yourself today. R-E-L-A-X. Relax.
If Steve ruled the world.
Pretty soon, this show's the only place you're going to be hear that clip anymore because he's going to be gone. All right, here's an idea. Maybe timeouts aren't just for kids anymore. Maybe we set some ground rules for adult behavior. It's long overdue, people. Just like we do for kids. Have a tantrum on Twitter, you're off for a week. Have a flame out on Facebook, no posts for a month. rant and rave at a local school board meeting. You go sit in the back row facing the wall. And by the way, take off that silly tactical vest you ordered on the internet. You look like an idiot. Complain about masks. Boo-hoo. Shop online. Order takeout. They don't need to see your face. Maybe we need some tough love to straighten out the folks who just can't seem to control themselves in public. Maybe we need, let's be introspective. Maybe we need a code of conduct for radio hosts. Just spitballing here. No shouting. Again, no shouting. No ranting about issues that like two people care about. No complaining about anything without offering a solution. Say the name of the paper. It's the Journal Sentinel, for Pete's sakes. Wait! That would wipe out most of the people working in the business. Maybe just get smarter.
What makes someone smart is they're willing to learn. With eyes and ears open, they'll give you a turn to talk, to sing, to dance, to draw, to do something that might leave them in awe. Then you do the same. Let them have a turn and think of the wonderful things you can learn. But shut off your mind, close your eyes, close your ears, and you won't be nearly as smart as your peers. Those people who know that they don't know it all, who'll stop, who'll listen and not have the gall to talk, 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 talk with no breath. To talk, 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 talk you to death. And sure, they might know lots of interesting stuff about music and art, but enough is enough.
If Steve ruled the world.
I can't say it any better, fake Mr. Rogers. All right, last but not least, we all get angry on occasion, don't we? The difference is most of us can move on from our anger. Most of us, me included, can see the positives in any situation. Most of us don't treat other human beings like garbage. Want to live a happier life? One, listen to my show every day, noon and 9 to noon on WTMJ. It's a ray of sunshine in a sea of despair and hostility. Two, take a deep breath before you speak, or post for that matter. Oxygen actually makes the brain work better. That's science, people. And you know how I feel about science. I trust it as much as I do the arm strength and play-calling ability of one Aaron Rodgers, even if he plays on the Jets. And when is that trade happening, by the way? We have like 50 people working in sports here, and they know nothing more than I know. Anyway, I want to be positive. Like this. All right, that's this week's...
If Steve ruled the world.
Take us to break, young Brandon.
Girl, I can't understand it. Why you gonna hurt me? After all of the things I've done for you. I buy you champagne and roses. Put diamonds on your finger.
Would they get if I just played this for the rest of the half of the hour? They'd get mad. Like, how long before people came running downstairs?
Probably not long, but it's such a good song.
Oh my, it's infectious.
It's good.
I had people dancing outside the glass here. Are you kidding me with this? This is a great song. You don't get that anywhere else. You think one of those other knuckleheads in town is going to play this on a news talk stage? Come on. Give me one more, like, 50-second burst, then we'll let it go. That's brilliant! All right. Here's something not brilliant. Nice segue. Steve, on this Friday, happy Friday, everybody. Those of us in Southeast Wisconsin getting ready for the big snowmageddon. The final straw. The final countdown. running the gas out of our snowblower tomorrow, which is what I will do because I refuse to use it again after tomorrow. All right, I saw this story. Boss says get to it. I get to it. Here's the headline. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which is our local newspaper, by the way, if you don't know the name of it. 10 takeaways from Summerfest's 2023 lineup, including a lack of diversity on Milwaukee Festival's biggest stage. Piet Levy, the author of the said piece that I'm referring to, the conversation is an interesting one because of this. He says that, of course, about the main stage. Later on in the article, one of the subheads, women, more women. But this one caught my eye. After you just did the diversity hit on Summerfest, the headline on the women was an uptick of headliners with women in their ranks. Oh, that's diversity, isn't it? But that's not good enough. Oh, how about this one? There's a stronger hip-hop showing for the genre's 50th anniversary. That's not good enough. That's not enough diversity. Oh, it's got to be now defined by the main stage, which again points out, folks, the silliness of these diversity arguments. Because in the very piece that you put this banner headline about how Summerfest somehow is not doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is patently absurd and false, let me be the first person to say that, your own sub-headlines talk about how cool it is that there's more hip-hop this year. How cool it is that there's more headliners with women in them. I understand you got to have a hook. It's like radio. What's your hook? What's your question? Over-talked, overdone, over-discussed. But, yeah, okay. So I asked a question. 855-616-1620. I don't have a ton of time left, but I thought it was important to... I'm going to defend Summerfest here. I love Summerfest. Is it perfect? No, nothing is. Ever is, by the way. Is it old-fashioned? Maybe. I saw somebody who I actually have a lot of respect for, a younger generation thought leader in Milwaukee. I'll give him that title. Lamenting, and I'm paraphrasing, about how all the old groups showing up at Summerfest. You know why that is? Thought leaders? Young, generational thought leaders? Because the people who show up, who buy the tickets, who have bought the tickets, like that kind of music. Does it mean you shun the other ones? No, they're not doing that. Incredible diversity. Women? Hip-hop artists? And I might be going on a limb here, but I'm guessing most hip-hop artists that are worth their salt or anything are probably not white guys. Vanilla Ice excluded from that conversation. Never mind. The point is, they understand how to run a festival. Their goal is to make money and put on a good show. Which is the first... I understand that what critics do, right? First a hook, then you... try to make the case. And I like this reviewer. He had a brilliant review of Bruce Springsteen's concert a couple weeks ago. Fantastic. So nothing against the reviewer. I think your message sucks. There's no deliberate attempt to not have diverse acts on the main stage. They're limited, though. Artists, performers are still dealing with COVID. Springsteen canceled like 3 shows recently. Is that not a reality you can embrace? Or is it COVID over and then so that's not an excuse anymore? Is that where we're going with this? To make any claim at all that Summerfest doesn't understand diversity is absolutely false and probably more importantly, just idiotic. Can you say it? Sure. Free press. Knock yourself out. But when you're making that banner headline, including a lack of diversity on the Milwaukee Festival's biggest stage. And then in the article, you have a couple examples, not on the biggest stage, I'll admit that, but examples where they have stepped up in bigger ways for women and a genre that's, let's be honest, primarily minority. Don't you kind of have to give them some credibility there, some love? And you know what? They don't have to defend themselves. They know how to run a festival. It's highly successful. I don't agree with everything they do. I don't like the 3-weekend thing. I've been honest about that. Is it the end of the world? No. I went twice on the weekends last year, enjoyed myself. But I'm not going to sit here and moan about the fact that James Taylor or Sheryl Crow or some of the other acts are white. How about we just enjoy the music? But again, this is where we're at. And this has been a theme on this show the last couple weeks. At some point, everyone's got to say to this stuff, you know what? No. We're not going to put quotas on. We're not going to meet some number, some standard. You want to be real about numbers? Here's a homework assignment for you, Piet Levy. Go look up the actual numbers, statistical raw data, on the percentage of minorities in this country. African American, Asian, white. And then take those numbers, and then if you really want to do a statistical analysis, apply it to the actual performers, and see if you don't actually come pretty close. What do you want, 50-50? What does that prove? One, artists control when they travel and tour. Summerfest doesn't. Two, there is still a pandemic. Some artists are still not performing. That's a reality you got to face. Let's stop trying to make problems that don't exist. And I understand this has been a bit of a rant, but I'm going to defend Summerfest here. It is the greatest music festival on the planet, and I'm biased. I get it. I've never gone to Summerfest and had a bad time. I enjoy myself. The music's incredible. And by the way, for the price of one ticket, main stage excluded, you can see dozens of acts if you stay during the day and nights. All included in that ticket price. Cheap Trick, how about that? Are they white? Sure. Who cares? Sometimes there's stories you shouldn't write. And I'm the biggest defender of journalists you'll find in this market and probably beyond that. But come on. It makes no sense. Quick break. Got a dance party going on here today at 11 o'clock. Man, makes you want to move, though. Get up off your butts. Go to Summerfest this summer. Just a rhetorical question, but who knows better how to run a festival? A reporter slash critic or somebody who's run a festival for 50 plus years? I go with the latter. Do these issues matter? Of course they do. And again, you're hearing these words come from somebody who's actually very supportive of social justice issues. But at some point, making the argument to make the argument hurts the arguments. Make sense? And Piet is welcome to come on the show. You want, give me a call or send me an email. steve.scafidi2fs1d@wtmj.com. We'll have the conversation on the air. Like I said, I loved your Springsteen piece. Brilliant. I agree with you. It's one of the greatest concerts I've ever seen, and I've seen hundreds of them. And I've seen The Boss a bunch of times. So it's not about that. It's about the point you're trying to make, and I don't think it was a valid point. That's it. All right. Something we do every Friday as well. This week is no different. WTMJ Cares takes the plunge. Action taken against reckless driving in Madison. A Muskego man makes a whale of a rescue and more. It's the Week in Review, sponsored and brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
What we do here is go back.
Our WTMJ Cares initiative in support of Special Olympics Wisconsin culminates in this morning's polar plunge into Lake Michigan.
I'm here to support a program that is near and dear to my heart and I believe in so strongly.
Which of you spent more time in the water yesterday?
Eric.
I was in the pool!
Painful, and it's so disrespectful.
That reaction coming after Express News published a comic depicting a trans person as being demented.
Express News prints the Germantown paper and many others in the area, including Menominee Falls and West Bend.
How many people let that cartoon go out?
The final, Michigan State over Marquette, 69-60.
Great to see a guy who knows how to coach, take a team, they weren't supposed to do what they did, be where they are, and they're going to be great for years.
I just wanted to offer a milkshake.
Thanks.
Silver, a record 7th national championship for the Wisconsin Badgers.
I still just keep saying, what just happened? Like, did we really just win?
The firm that has agreed to purchase the former Northridge Mall on Milwaukee's northwest side said it wants to redevelop the site for industrial use, even save part of the building.
Reusing the building, I would be shocked if they got away with that. People have torn this thing apart. Let's go to
the another time, perhaps.
Entrepreneur and actress Gwyneth Paltrow taking a break from red carpets to appear in court. Paltrow is being sued, accused of injuring a man who claims she skied into him at a resort in 2016.
He hits down, apparently his side and his head, and she is essentially falling on him.
You French fry when you pizza, you're gonna have a bad time.
We're following a developing story from south of the border. A man from Green Bay killed while visiting Chicago.
A pair of bills under consideration in the legislature today aimed at tackling reckless driving.
I'm looking forward to signing these bills.
This bill sends a message to criminals that this behavior will no longer be tolerated.
8% and a step.
The spokesperson for the district says pay raises in line with cost of living increase as well as increase for years of service would cost the district more than $14 million.
23-year-old man is dead after a police chase resulted in a crash into the Oak Creek in South Milwaukee.
The city of Milwaukee is now prepping for a lawsuit against Kia and Hyundai after the Common Council authorized it earlier this week.
Less than 2 weeks before what some people call the most important election in their lifetime, a phrase that we've heard, frankly, in my opinion, too often.
This is the most important
election, in my opinion, of history.
A man raped a 15-year-old. Came to you for sentencing. You said no prison time at all because COVID.
There is no way I would have said in any case you're not going to prison COVID. That's an outright lie.
As now ye might will.
A Muskego man is being hailed as a hero after coming to the rescue of four sailors stranded in a life raft after their boat was struck by a whale and sank in Polynesia.
You've saved me!
Think about 65 miles away when we realized that we were the closest boat.
What a week, huh?
What a week, eh?
What a week.
Shut it down! Oh, let's go home!
Everybody's working for the weekend. I am off to the weekend. Let's take one last look at our show poll for today. You can find it at 620 WTMJ or WTMJ Steve. TikTok, the popular social media service featuring user-submitted videos, is under fire for privacy concerns and its connections to the Chinese government. What would your reaction be if it was banned? 69% of you say couldn't care less. That's my take as well. Will I miss it? No. Do you think it's going to happen? We'll see.